The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will note the roll and will officially call the meeting to order when we have a quorum. Members, we're going to be a little bit flexible here today in the order and so forth, but I would like to let the committee know what order I'm planning to go in with. The first bill up would be House File 2786 with Zinski. Number two would be a Depke bill. Number three, a Davids bill. Number four, Downey. Number five, Portman. So it's my intention to get these bills where they need to go here today. And then I believe we have a QAM bill that if we have time that's for informational purposes that we'll hear if we can get to that. So members, if our questions could be concise, and we will go from there. Representative Swazinski, welcome to the Tax Committee, sir. When we have a quorum, I will move House File 2786 be recommended, pass, and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Okay, so when we have a quorum here, I believe there's an amendment on this bill that we'll want to take. Oh, it is amended in division. Okay, so it'll be here as it should be. We're very fortunate today. Representative Crawford has a group of students here from Pine City. I believe if you just kind of wave your hands here. Welcome to the Tax Committee. Pine City Dragons. All right. Didn't know if I remember that one. You know, there's only what there's. As the school districts consolidate, there's fewer schools to memorize. So I've about got them all. Pine City Dragons.
And what were you, Mr. Chairman?
I was the Spring Valley Wolves. We were the Spring Valley Wolves. They no longer exist. So now it's the Kingsland Knights because the Wyckoff Wildcats and the Spring Valley Wolves merged and became Knights somehow. So, okay. So welcome to the Tax Committee. We will go forward, even though, members, we do not have a quorum.
How far are we?
Two. Okay, we need a couple more members. Welcome to the Tax Committee. So when we do have a quorum, I will move House File 2786. Representative.
Mr. Chair, members, just for informational purposes only, I was a Minnesota Viking, in case you're...
A
Minnesota Viking.
Minnesota
Viking.
They forgot to put the S in there?
Well, no. That's the way it's supposed to be spelled, I believe. But
okay.
Mr. Chair, members, this bill, 2786, requires the Department of Revenue to pay calendar year 2011 LGA amounts to the cities that had their payments withheld because cities did not meet their filing standards and guidelines established by the Office of the State Auditor for filing financial reports, provided that each city files all missing documents by May 31st of 2012. Current law required is that we just are going to simply push back the due date on some of these cities. Most of the cities have indeed filed in the timeline that we're talking about. Some have had limited contact. Others had varying reasons why their paperwork had not been completed. Staff shifting, folks within the city, clerks, city council members, varying reasons why their work had not been done. In property taxes, we were debating whether or not to go one by one and decide which cities should go ahead because of their reasoning behind the reason they didn't have their work done. Representative Marquardt and myself agree that we should indeed just maybe extend the date to a hardline date of May 31st. That all paperwork needs to be in and filed in order to receive LGA payments. So that is the way the bill sits before you. I'd appreciate your consideration.
Representative, how many cities would this involve?
I believe we were at 18.
Okay. Okay, Ms. Schill, could you please join us?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Kathy Schill, House Fiscal.
Okay, and before we proceed, Ms. Schill, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns on this bill or in support of this bill? And members, again, we are going to try and speed things up a little bit, but we do want to hear from folks. So, Ms. Schill, to the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, this bill has a cost to it. The cost for forgiving the LGA penalties is listed, should be on a sheet in your packet. Total is just under $795,000. To be able to accommodate this, we will have, and the bill provides for this, have a cancellation of unpaid fiscal 2012 LGA appropriation so that the monies can become available to basically reinstate the portion of the appropriation that has been withheld.
Okay. Questions for Ms. Schell? Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this question is for her or just for us. I know that I receive, as a state legislator, Representative Davids, a notice when my cities have not followed the rules, and I always call the mayors. I wonder if that was the case here or if that's just something unique to me. I always did that, and maybe that's the only way that they learn that these payments haven't been made. And I don't think Michelle can respond to that. But
well, Representative Erickson, I've learned that if you don't call them, then they really learn. Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Say, just as a point of clarification, I think of the 18 cities, and I'll stand to be corrected, all except six of them have fulfilled the requirements now. Is that correct?
Representative Swazinski.
Chair Davids, Representative Crawford, yeah, I do believe that's the case. We're pretty close to that number. Kind of moving back to Representative Erickson's question, we have had conversations in the meantime between yesterday and today looking at potential of expanding that letter list. So maybe potentially including the associations that represent the city so that, you know, what normally happens, I believe, is that so if there's a delinquent city, the state sends a letter to the clerk that they have in their records, the mayor, and also the representative and the senator. And so the idea is potentially if there'd be a way that we could expand that list. I don't know if there are rules in place, or maybe we could simply ask that the auditor would potentially do that, to also send something to the association, because that is kind of the way that their services work. They are looking to serve their constituents, their members, as best as possible. And oftentimes we're dealing with cities that you know, are going through some sort of a flux that have an issue. There are points in time that seems like maybe after a large project, a water project, that was in a few of the reasons why a few of these cities were delinquent in getting their paperwork in, is because in years past they maybe did a water project with the rural development. Some of the changes in the requirements with the numbers and paperwork put an undue burden on some of the city's officials that aren't simply trained to do some of the reporting. So
thank that would you. Be and something. And thank you, Representative Erickson, for your point too. That's legislators handle that differently. Members, we have a quorum. We'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Crawford moves the minutes of March 27th. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Crawford. Okay, with that, we have a couple more questions here. Representative Crawford, you still have the floor, sir?
No, that's fine.
Okay, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we're going to have the auditor speak a little bit to this. I don't want to belabor the point, but I read the letter from the folks from the city of Hoffman, and I'm a little concerned that they didn't get any responses back from the auditor's office when they made at least, it looks like, three attempts to have the auditor contact them and say what's going on. I think we probably could have avoided this altogether if there had been some responsiveness, and just wondering if they have modified their response procedures to address this issue for the future.
Ms. Dalton, to that point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't see anyone from the state auditor here. I have had discussions with the state auditor. In the case of the city of Hoffman, all of the correspondence that they are talking about is correspondence that happened after the end of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that correspondence actually wasn't with the state auditor's office. It was with the Department of Revenue, and unfortunately they were emailing somebody who had left, and unfortunately the person who's in charge of this with the state auditor's office has been ill and recently passed away, and so that's why they were not getting responses. It wasn't because of they were being non-responsive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, with that, seeing no further questions, I will renew my motion that House File 2786 be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any more discussion from the audience? Questions from members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Swazinski. Okay, item next, Representative Depke. And again, what we have up here is we have, I'm going to go Depke, Davids, Downey, Portman, and then if we have time, Quam for an informational hearing. Okay, Representative Depke moves House File 2792 be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Education Finance.
No? Where it came from.
I'll move it at this point and we'll visit. Okay. Representative Depke, welcome to your committee. If you could please present House File 2792.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have with me also a testifier from the school district, one of my school districts on this particular bill. I introduced this specific bill regarding the lease levy authority and to the Education Finance Committee about 2 weeks ago. They wanted to apply the change in the law statewide, and it is that's why it's deferred to this committee, and the bill is now before taxes, and it is an opportunity to provide this lease levy authority to all school districts. You'll notice that in the DE1 amendment that you have in your packets, which was the bill that was passed in the education finance, the portion of my bill relates to the second or the third page, starts on 3.5. The important thing that you need for me to bring to your attention is on line 3.7 and 3.8. The lease cost for the administrative space is no greater than the lease cost for instructional space in the district that the district would otherwise lease. And otherwise, current law allows school districts to levy for instructional space only. Many times being able to balance between the instructional space and the administrative cost can save the school district money. And this bill makes sure that the cost is no more expensive than is currently being levied. It does not have a fiscal note on the state level, and it also does not have any local impact cost. I do have my director of finance from the Wayzata School District who has brought this to my attention. The education finance also had heard a similar testimony from the Faribault School District. So this is Mr. Westrom, finance director of the Wayzata School.
Okay, before we go to Mr. Westrom for brief comments, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in opposition to House File 2792? Anyone else that wishes to test on behalf of 2792? Okay, welcome, committee, sir. If you could provide a brief testimony to House File 2792, there's no opposing or testimony with concerns. Okay, Mr. Westrom, welcome, committee, sir.
Okay, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd like to thank you for the important work that you do for students and school districts in Minnesota, and we'd also like to thank Representative Depke for introducing this bill. The Wayzata School District has about 10,600 students. 7 years ago, we had 1,000 less students, but we still had the same amount of classroom space within our district. Next fall, we actually received prior approval to lease some instructional space for some of the overflow, and we actually found that it was a challenge because it was going to be ineffective for from a cost perspective because the students would not have access to media centers, they would not have access to gymnasiums, they would not have access to green spaces, and the transportation costs and other operating costs would make it more expensive than actually moving adults. So the basis behind this is we believe it'll be more effective and more operational and instructionally sound to move adults off of our campuses and allow our students to take over some administrative spaces. With that, there is no fiscal impact to the state or to our local property taxpayers. However, it does provide some efficiencies, and over a 10-year period would save approximately $266,000 of our local taxpayer funding and operational costs.
Questions from committee member, Representative Debke.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the page has given you the spreadsheet from the Wayzata School District outlining the savings over the next 10 years.
Questions from members? Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Perhaps the witness. I just wanted to clarify then, is this allowing you to lease to build space or simply lease space?
Mr. Westrom.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative. It's actually to lease space off of our campuses. The lease levy is occasionally used to build space on the campuses, specifically portables and maybe single classrooms here and there. But at this point, it would be to lease space. So it would be an operating lease, not a capital lease.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, a couple of questions. First of all, the research summary talks about Wayzata, but the bill doesn't read Wayzata.
Representative Carlson, if you could please, Representative Carlson, if you could please use your microphone so we can hear what you say.
Summary talks about the Wayzata School District, but the bill reads statewide, and I think you referenced statewide. So,
yes, sir.
Representative Debke.
Representative Carlson. The bill was amended. There's a DE1 amendment that should be in your package on House File 2792.
Actually, members, it's already been amended. It's the way you have the bill currently.
Yes, and so your bill should actually, the summary maybe doesn't keep up with what the bill actually says. Now, if you'll refer to the third page, the underlined portion is my bill, but it applies to all school districts.
And that's
Carlson.
What I thought the testimony was, and I was just trying to clarify because it was a little bit of a mismatch. Not a little bit, but a major mismatch.
Yes,
but,
thank you.
The question I had, what kind of administrative positions are we talking about when administrators are off-site? Are we talking about what generally be referred to as sort of the central office staff, or I'd hate to see online administrators that are managing the building being off-site.
Mr. Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, actually the areas that we would move off-site specifically would be our transportation office. Currently our transportation office is located within one of our buildings. And it would be very simple to move them over to the bus garage and lease space from the owner of the bus garage. So that's one example. We wouldn't have administrators who are directly responsible for the day-to-day operations of the actual building and the instructional programs. Another example would be food service. Our food service offices could be off of an instructional site because they actually manage 11 sites within the Wayzata District. So those are just a couple of examples, but we wouldn't be moving key administrative support to the instructional program.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, that answers the question. I did work in a school district where some of what I'll call the online administrators were sometimes not on site with the building they were administering, and I just wanted to make sure that didn't, in my view, function very well.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to lend my support to this piece of legislation. Thank you for Representative Debke bringing this forward.
Further questions? If not, Representative Debke renews her motion that House File 2792 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Ed Finance Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Item next, we'll go to the Davids Bill, House File 2690, with two amendments. Okay, members, to get the bill in the shape I would like, I'm going to move the A12-0810 amendment. A brief description from Mr. Michael, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what this delete everything amendment does is three things. Article 1 combines the estate tax provisions from the two department bills, the technical bill and the policy bill, with a couple of modifications that were requested by the Bar Association section on probate and real estate law, that one of which was sort of agreed to by the Department of Revenue, and the other one is still under discussion, that second one that's still under discussion modifies the recapture tax so that the recapture tax only applies to the portion of the disposition, not to the entire exclusion. So that's Article 1. Article 2 is Representative Runbeck's bill. That's the bill that eliminates the obsolete and expired provisions from the Economic Development Chapter, Chapter 469, which the committee heard earlier. The language of that has been modified to eliminate the adjustments to tax increment for the new market value exclusion provisions. The Article 3 is...
Why is it bad, huh?
Article 3 is the public finance bill, which the committee heard with several provisions from that eliminated. The provision that related to the new energy financing program that was discussed by the committee that allowed that to be imposed without regard to the benefit was deleted. The authority of under the capital improvement program and the street reconstruction that allowed cities and counties to finance improvements that had been paid for before the plans were approved was also deleted. So that basically is what's in the amendment. There's a second technical amendment that's being copied and will be distributed that makes a couple of changes. In drafting this amendment, there were some cross-references that were not picked up, and that it corrects that. There was also a section in the Runbeck bill that was both being repealed and being amended, and so the amendment to that is being dropped. And the third thing is that in the estate tax provision, the department's provision that provided that the small business exclusion did not apply to farmland is dropped from that. So farmland could go qualify under the homestead farm exemption, and if it doesn't qualify under that, could qualify under the small business exemption. So that's the description of the A5 amendment to the delete everything amendment.
Okay, members, if it's okay, I'd like to get this bill in with the amendments on, and then if there's things that we need to talk about, we certainly will. So I'll move the A12-0810 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I will now move the... Okay, we'll wait till it's distributed here. And Mr. Michaels has described the H269085 amendment. I'd like to get it the way I'd like it, and then if we need to do things from there, we certainly will. So, members, over here. You have it? Okay, I will move the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill in the shape the author would like. And so, just to get kind of, and we're kind of on some time constraints here to get some of these bills out, but I do want to have discussion on these. So, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify with concerns on the bill as amended, House File 2690 as amended? Mr. Cummings, will. Okay, with testify to your neutrality. Well, we will come to the department. Who would like to testify on behalf of the bill? We will do a revenue note. In fact, let's do that first. Ms. Schill, please come up with go over the revenue note for members, please. Members, that should be in your packet.
Mr. Chair, members, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. You have a spreadsheet available in your packet that looks like this, and it's labeled House File 2690 DE1 Amendment. I failed to confer with Mr. Michael on some of the changes here, so I will give you an update on that spreadsheet right now. Lines 4 through 9 should be deleted. There is no content in this bill right now of House File 2072. That erases any cost that's associated with the provisions that might have been included previously. And the content of House File 2690 and House File 2691, lines 13 through 16, contain only those portions relevant to the estate tax. Once again, there is no state fund impact of either of these provisions. The overall impact of the bill is zero.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to the department first, and then we'll go to other folks that wish to testify on behalf of the bill. Mr. Cummins, welcome to the committee, sir. Mr. Cummins, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and then provide us your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Cummins, and I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Revenue.
Welcome, committee, sir.
Chair Davids, as you know, the department has worked with this committee in developing the non-controversial, I would say, Davids Department Technical and Policy Bill.
I like that.
We believe we've done so with the help of this committee, and we continue to support the passage of those bills. However, subject to our final review of amended language on the estate tax provision and other provisions, and assuming the amendments from the bill as introduced do not expand the estate tax provisions and are acceptable, we would recommend passage of the department policy and technical bills.
Thank you. That's very nice.
We wanted to bring your attention to changes in Section 9 that would reduce the recapture tax and could result in a revenue loss. We want you to know our research division is looking into that, and we'll be able to get back to you some further numbers on that. We also noticed in the A5 amendment that that lines 4.1 through 4.5 were deleted, and our intention as a department was to try to draft language to really reflect legislative intent in this area and make the tests in this area administrable. In this area, we're trying to make sure that for any particular type of property, only one test applies, either for the qualified small business test or the qualified farm test. Mr. Chair, we would ask that we could continue to work with you as the bill moves along in order to clarify this language to capture your intent while also making sure this provision is administrable. So we wanted to just put that on the record as we move forward. We understand that this committee may consider a larger technical bill that may include other provisions, including the public finance bill, the enterprise zone cleanup, and technical corrections to the market value homestead credit exclusion. The Department of Revenue does not oppose the technical bill that includes the department policy and technical bills as introduced with amendments as approved, the public finance bill, the enterprise zone cleanup bill, the market value homestead credit exclusion technical corrections bill, depending on final review of the language of the package.
We're making progress here. This is
so
good.
We do not oppose.
This is good. And just for the record, the issue on the A5 amendment as far as the clawback on the estate tax business, I think it's just clarifying. We don't want to, you know, we're not trying to expand that. So hopefully that's what your review will find. That's what we're trying to accomplish. Mr. Cummins.
Mr. Chair, and on the A5 amendment, specifically as it relates to page 4, lines 1 through 5, we would like to continue to work with you and Mr. Michael to find a way to capture your intent while at the same time making it a way that's administrable. and I think we can get there, but I think just taking it out wholesale. So we would ask, respectfully request that we could continue to work with the chair on the provision.
Absolutely, and I feel it's quite clear, but we will continue to work. That's what we want to do. And so, members, we have the bill as amended. We will be, any questions for Mr. Cummings? Mr. Cummings, thank you so much for your testimony. Anyone like to testify on behalf of the bill?
This is a note to you.
If you could please, gentlemen, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Scott Nelson. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Makel, Krauts and Moore, and I'm here on behalf of the estate and probate section of the council, which has been working with the Department of Revenue on the changes to Article 1 dealing with the estate tax changes.
Welcome, Mr. Nelson. Could you please state your name for the record?
Mr. Chairman, Andrew Basie. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Briggs & Morgan. I'm co-chair of the Legislative Committee for the Probate and Trust section.
And so when you, could you please spell your last name?
B as in boy, A-E-S-E.
Okay. Welcome, committee. And when you say you're on working on behalf of a committee or something, you're talking about the Bar Association?
Yes, correct? Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Nelson, would you like to start, sir?
Yeah, we just we'll make a brief comment just in response to the testimony which you just heard, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on the recapture provision, which I believe is Section 9 of Article 1. Our concern there that we want to try to clarify in making the technical changes to the original legislation is the concern that the way it's drafted right now, it just simply says that if there's a disposition of a qualified interest, which would either be a small business or farm interest, within the 3 years after the decedent dies, that there is a recapture that's simply defined as 16% of the amount that was excluded from the original estate for tax purposes. And our concern is that we may be penalizing the family more than the savings in tax that they originally received when they excluded the portion from the estate. So what we're trying to clarify here is to make sure that the penalty is assessed on the portion of the qualified interest that is actually disposed of and is no longer qualifies under this exclusion. And ideally, also, that the rate would only apply to the rate that they saved at the time of the decedent's death. So in other words, you know, the just a simple example, maybe if the estate, if this portion of the property had been included in the estate, maybe the effective tax rate on that portion would have been 5%. And what we would like to see is that if there's a penalty down the road because of a disposition, that the penalty would be assessed at the 5% rate plus, of course, accrued interest from the date of the savings. But the idea is that we wouldn't simply just say, okay, well, you got to pay a 16% penalty, even though you would have only saved 5% at the inception. So that would be my only quick comment on the presentation this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson's question. Before we go to the next gentleman, questions for Mr. Nelson. Okay, thank you, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, Andrew Basie, on behalf of the Legislative Committee of the Probate and Trust section of the Bar.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I have no other comments. I'm happy to take questions if anyone has questions.
When I said brief, I appreciate your listening. Okay. Questions for Mr. Nelson or Mr. Basie? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nelson, is it then that the new language on line 5.31 is well, it begins on 5.30. Is that the language that is in question, or is it all of the new language?
Mr. Nelson or Basie?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I believe it would be the language on line 5.3 and 5.31. And the language proposed by the Bar Association is the underlined language, which reads, with respect to the qualified interest disposed of. And again, that's where we're trying to clarify that it only applies to the portion disposed of. If we another quick example, if we have three siblings who have inherited the property from mom or dad, and one of the three has to exit the business or the farm operation, the idea would be that we would apply the penalty to the one-third that's been no longer treated as qualified under this exemption, rather than applying the penalty to 100%.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was good to hear.
Okay, any amendments from members? Okay, discussion on the bill as amended, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I heard Mr. Michael mention something about the market value exclusion, and I didn't catch exactly before. Is that part deleted, or is there something referring at all? I didn't see it as I looked through the
Representative Michael. Pages.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Marquardt, that all of the provisions that were in the original technical bills related to the market value exclusion, including the one provision in Representative Runbeck's bill, have been deleted from them.
Thank you very much.
There is still one reference to the market value credit, which is repeated, but that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Mike. Thank you, Mr. Mike.
Other questions? Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On Article 2, Section 41, dealing with property tax abatements from a political subdivision, I don't recall hearing this, but what it does, as I read it, is it allows this political subdivision now to grant an abatement to anyone, any type of property, including residential property, where before it was limited to a qualified business with a long list of desirable type businesses. The only thing that remains is on line 38.5, a taxpayer whose real and personal property is subject to valuation under Minnesota Rules Chapter 8100. I'm not sure what that is, but can you tell us what the purpose of this is, and was this in another bill that we heard?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, this was in Representative Runbeck's bill. And all of that stricken language is obsolete language. If you look online on page 39, lines 10 through 12, you'll see it says the authority to grant new abatements under this subdivision expires June 1, 2004, except the authority to grant new abatements for real and personal property subject to valuation under that administrative rule. And that is the authority that's not stricken on that on page 38, lines 5 and 6 that you referred to. So essentially what this is doing is it's restricted, and that language was enacted as a way for the power plant communities to provide an abatement as a mechanism for Xcel Energy when, if you recall, there was a redoing of how they were valuing personal property. That essentially reduced, because of changes in depreciation rules, quite significantly the amount of personal property for power plants that was taxable. Mm-hmm. One of the mechanisms that the utilities tried to come up with as a way to buffer that was to have an abatement where they would actually pay back to the power plant communities, and this provision was the mechanism to do that. In drafting this bill, I did not repeal that authority because I wasn't sure whether, and I know these were discussions, I believe, with the city of Red Wing and maybe some other cities, where I'm not sure whether they use that abatement authority. Otherwise, I would have recommended repealing this entire section. But what remains of this section is only allowing abatements in the context of that personal property reduction for utility property. There is not general abatement authority, and this was in the Runbeck bill. All of this language that's being stricken here is obsolete language.
Thank you.
Representative Loeffler?
Thank you.
That was my intent, what he said.
Very shrewd.
Okay. Any further discussion on House File 2690 as amended? And this would go to the floor. Yeah, since there's no... Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess it's not really about this, but... You know, I've noticed you've passed lots of vehicle bills to the calendar and are more on their way today. And I saw another one, education one, went through today. It seems like you have a lot. And you had a lot left over from last year that are still on the desk. Is there a plan for a couple more omnibus tax bills here? Can you loop us in?
I have a plan. And after today and hearing from the Department of Revenue, we're going to get so much good stuff done for the people of Minnesota. We're going to need some vehicles out there. I'm feeling the love today, where I wasn't last week. So we've got some vehicle bills out there, and of course, the vehicles don't do us any good unless they get a signature from the governor. So it's my intention to work on issues that the Department of Revenue and the governor and the House and Senate can agree on, and we're going to need some. I learned this one a long time ago. I didn't even learn this one from Representative Kahn. This is something I learned a long time ago when you have some needs out there and you got to have some way to get there. So we've got a Chevy, Cadillac, a Ford, and a Studebaker ready to go. And what did you have, Representative Lesh? You had a Dodge Dart?
Oh, that was a Dodge Diplomat. It wasn't mine, it was my friend's. Okay. I didn't even have a car. I'd do cars.
So Representative Lencheski, that's where we're at. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you should have some vehicles, but you have a bunch left over from last year, and you have a whole bunch more this year, and I was just wondering if there's a role for the minority if you're trying to get the governor to sign a bill. We haven't been, you know, part of a process this biennium as far as creating a tax bill, so I'm just wondering your thoughts on that.
Representative Lencheski, there's certainly a role for the minority party on these issues, because without the minority party, my chances with the governor are much less. So we will want to make sure that as things move forward, it's issues that are agreed to by both the minority and majority parties and the governor's office.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Biskins?
Well, just a comment, Mr. Chair. I do see that on your agenda there is a bill from the minority party that I do look forward to hearing today. So I do salute you in your bipartisanism.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2690 be, as amended, be recommended passing and sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Okay, item next will be Representative Downey moves House File 1954. So members, take a second here, if you would, to bring before you House File 1954. So Representative Downey moves House File 1954 be recommended, passed, and sent to the Committee of Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Downey, if you could please present your bill, sir.
Thank you. Some of you have heard this bill already in previous committees. It's been through quite a few already, and I appreciate the chance to have it heard here one final time before we hopefully move it on and get a chance to vote on it on the floor. The purpose of this bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to part the clouds and hopefully give citizens a very clean one-page, maybe two-page, nice and simple look at the spending in local governments. As most of us are aware, the last 6 to 9 months, we've seen quite a bit of finger-pointing and no small amount of debate about local property taxes and what the cause of those property taxes were. And some work was being done in parallel and even before that by a couple of organizations who will come down and testify here in a minute, kind of driving at the same thing from the perspective of real estate developers wanting to understand what was happening with their taxes and what was driving the spending in their local units of government. And what became apparent to me is that we have a fairly extensive truth in taxation process that's very focused on taxes and mill rates and tax capacity and all these things that frankly are not very understandable to many of us here in the legislature, let alone your average citizen trying to understand what's going on in their local government. And so those truth in taxation hearings are often a bit of a fog to people, and there's a lot of documents and a lot of information, and just the basic simple information of what did we spend last year, what did we spend the year before, what did we spend the year before, and what's driving these cost increases is really still kind of behind the curtains, at least in its most simple and easy to understand way. And another feature of truth in taxation, which I think contributes to it not being really well attended in most jurisdictions, is that it all occurs after the budget is pretty much set and after the November elections. And obviously before the elections is when people really pay attention to these kinds of things and stay engaged. So this bill proposes a very simple presentation of local units of government's spending both by program area and then by expenditure type. And I did up a quick little spreadsheet one morning to see how complicated this would really be to do, and I'm handing this around. This is just my 15-20 minute interpretation of what we'd be looking for citizens to get. And so you can see that this is hopefully a nice, clean presentation. Maybe there could be a bar chart or a pie chart or something along with it, but something nice and easy for local governments to understand. And before we get to some testimony and a couple of amendments, members, I'd just point out, this is what my community puts out. And you know, and it's a beautiful document. It really is. It goes deep into every program area. There's appendices with expenditures and things broken down by program area. And it's great. It really is for those of us who can understand it. And if you're a finance person, you'd be very proud of this document and look at it and understand it. But members, everyday citizens just trying to understand what spending is, what kind of spending trends are, something like this is going to be much more effective. And so the hope is that this would be perhaps an executive summary or a separate produced document for citizens to understand what's happening with the spending in their local units of government. And so that's the purpose of this bill, to require this dual view by program and by expenditure type, that local governments would publish this before the elections every year. Mr. Chair, I do have a couple of amendments, but it might serve the committee well to hear some testimony on the bill and things before we get to those. But
well, what I'd like to do here, members and Representative Downing, is I'd like to get the bill in the shape you would like it.
Sure.
And then we will... there are some other amendments, but you said several amendments. I just have, I think, for you, the 8-2. The 8-2 amendment, is that, do you have other ones?
Mr. Chair, I have the 8-2, and then I would like to make an oral amendment, a very simple oral amendment to the bill as well.
Okay, so what I'd like to do, members, as we do as a courtesy in this committee, is we get the bill in shape the author would like. And then I believe Representative Marquardt has an 8-3 amendment. I think what we'll do, if it's okay with the members, is get the bill in shape the author would like, hear the revenue note, take some testimony, and then we'll get to the Marquardt amendment and debate that. And members, we are kind of on a, I don't really want to cut things off, but I would like to get to the Hartman bill and get that out of here if we could in a bit. Representative Hartman, to that point?
Mr. Chair, I will be asking that the committee not progress my bill today. The facts are getting in the way of a really good story. So.
Oh, I like that story.
Yeah, so I can clarify some of the things that I said in property tax committee that I've learned about, but I don't think we need to move my bill.
Okay, so so far we're not, but we will get to it and let you make a case.
If you have time, okay. We can do that.
Okay. No, we're not going. we will move our own bills. Okay. With that... Representative Downey moves the 8-2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Downey, what's your oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, members, on page 1, line 12, after talking with a number of members, I'd like to change the minimum size of the jurisdiction from 2,500 population to 5,000. So it would be simply striking 2,500 and putting 5,000.
Okay, members, on page 1, line 1.12, Mr. Michael, is there any place else we would need to do that? Page 3, or Ms. Dahl, why don't you take us through what the oral amendment would do and where? I mean, we know what it would do, just where is it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe you have to make the same change on page 6, line 13.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Page
that
six,
is true.
Line 13 and then 3 point, how about?
Line 2
three
on
point
page
two.
3.
Okay, so Representative Downey moves on page 1, 1.12, delete 2,500 and insert 5,000. And members on page 3.2, delete 2,500, insert 5,000. And then on page 6, line 6.13, delete 2,500, insert 5,000. On page 7.7, delete 2,500 and insert 5,000. That's pretty much self-explanatory. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The H1954, on the bill, those changes are made. Okay. Now, Ms. Schell, could you please, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry for that. But on that last amendment, just if I'm reading something a little different here. On 1.11 and 1.12, it says counties and home rule charters with a population of 5,000. So there would be now some counties that would not be included.
Correct.
Representative Downey?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's true.
Okay, and then on 6.12 and 6.13, municipality means a statutory home rule charter city with a population greater than 5,000 or a county. So here, municipalities would be all counties, if I'm reading that right. So I don't know if that's Downey? The correct amendment or not. Or
Mr. Chair, I'm glad to think about the technicalities of this. The intent is to change the population threshold for reporting from 2,500 to 5,000. If Representative Marquardt is right, then maybe the original drafting of the bill had a minor correction required.
Ms. Dalton, help.
Mr. Chair, I do think there is actually one county under 5,000. Let me, if you want to discuss the work, I can actually work out on a handwritten amendment that we could then adopt.
Thank you, Mr. Marker. We'll continue to discuss this as if we know what we're doing, then we will actually make sure we know what we're doing. So we'll come back to Representative Marquardt's point of Ms. Dalton could clarify that. And then, members, we also have an A3 amendment that that Representative Marquardt will be presenting in a bit here. Ms. Schill, to the revenue note. Members, that should be in your packet.
Mr. Chair and members, there is a revenue estimate in your packet dated February 27th, and the impact on the first engrossment of the bill is a zero impact across the board. Of course, this revenue note was written with respect to the population over 2,500. I don't think that revenue estimate will change. In addition, we received yesterday the local impact note for this bill, and you do have a summary sheet of all the bills for today's committee, and basically the local impact note, once again based on population of 2,500 or greater, identifies an estimate for 104 cities and 52 counties. Basically, that they would incur additional staff, software, and training costs. That local impact is estimated at slightly over $2 million in fiscal 13, and ongoing maintenance costs thereafter of $156,000 each year. I do not know at this time how the change in the last oral amendment will affect this local impact note, but that's basically what we know at this time.
Well, Ms. Schill, it should lessen it.
Agreed, Mr. Chair.
Okay, but we don't know the numbers exactly.
So. Exactly.
Okay, questions of Ms. Schill. Representative Carlson.
Checking, I better get to the mic here. I heard from at least one of my cities that they were concerned with the change, that they would lose the history that they currently have with their current accounting system. Did you get any feedback on that kind of question, or is that a question better for the author?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, that issue was not addressed in the local impact note, so I do not have an answer for that question.
Representative Carlson?
Well, maybe when she's done, maybe the author can address the question then.
Certainly. Michelle, any more questions for Michelle? Then, Representative, thank you, Michelle. To the Carlson question, Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Maybe I can speak a little more broadly to the local impact note as well. To your specific question, Representative Carlson, I don't quite know how that would even be possible, that reporting on data would somehow eliminate the storage of history. With quite a bit of experience implementing finance systems, I don't know how that would be possible. And maybe with a broader statement with regard to the local impact note, I frankly don't understand them needing literally, you know, man weeks of effort to do this. I think the presentation of the spreadsheet that's kind of envisioned here I'm struggling to see how it would require literally recoding of their software. Members, this is just basically reporting off of existing general ledger data. And if you look at the assumptions that it appears came from the LMC, AMC, et cetera, you'd have to believe, in order to accept this local impact note, that literally 80% of our mid-size cities and 100% of our small cities have no ability to report on their spending. I struggle to believe that, and if that's true, then boy, we really need this bill. And it also says that 60% of our counties can't produce this expenditure data. I mean, honestly, how are you doing your budget if you have no idea what you spent over the last 3 years in these most basic of spending categories? So I really struggle with this. I have always struggled with the opposition from the local units of government. I have talked with a number of members and said, well, as a concession, we'll move the minimum threshold to a population of 5,000 and make sure that everything does go smoothly with the larger units of government, and then figure out whether and if it's valuable enough to move it down to the smaller units. But members, think about that. 60% of our counties and 80% of our mid-sized cities have no way to look back at their spending history. That's incredible. So I'd say this local impact note, if it's actually true, probably argues more for the bill than against it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think what we'll do, Representative Carlson still has the floor. Then I'd like to hear from folks with concerns, because maybe some of the questions will be addressed when we have the folks with concerns, unless Representative Loeffler would like to go after Representative Carlson. But Representative Carlson?
I'll wait for the testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. I have a list of folks with concerns. Jennifer O'Rourke, Keith Carlson, Bo Berenstein. And then is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify with concerns?
Mr. Chair, there are a couple who would like to testify without concerns.
Well, yes, we'll get to those next. There'll be a Kate. Well, let me ask a question. I have folks in favor. Kate Rakow, Mark Haveman. Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of House File 1954 as amended? Okay, so we'll give brief testimony from both sides, and then we'll take action. Well, then we have an amendment from our Senator Marquardt, then we'll take action on the bill. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Bo Berenstein. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you very much. We distributed, as the bill is being presented, a memo from our organization, the League of Cities, and Minnesota Intercounty Association, and you have a copy of the local impact note. I think the local impact note does a good job of summarizing our concerns with the bill. Right now, counties and cities do substantial reporting, as you know, both in budgeted basis and in audited financial statements to the state auditor. The systems that are currently set up are to meet those reporting requirements, which are the revenue side and then the expenditures by program. The trick and the cost of counties and cities is going to come from this expenditure type reporting. It's not current practice among local governments. Currently, it's going to cost a substantial amount of staff time, and as we've spoken to the county folks who would be doing this process, substantial costs in computer reprogramming, software changes, things of that nature. So we do believe that the local impact note does a good job of summarizing those concerns. I did want to talk a little bit about what we've offered to Representative Downey and others on this bill of what we can do. As I said, we're already doing a lot of reporting on the revenue and expenditures by program side. We also do an annual report, both cities and counties, to the state auditor detailing employee benefit and wage costs. That's an annual report that's submitted mid-year with the audited financial statements. I have talked to some of our county folks about if we could change that reporting form so that it looks specifically what the bill prescribes as far as breaking down pension contributions, health care contributions. And what they've said is in the 8 to 10 hours they spend filling out this employee cost report, to further break it down by those areas would be no problem. So if you look at the memo we handed out, There is a copy of it here. There is a the second page of it is a second page of it is a spreadsheet that shows exactly what we could report with our current reporting. And again, that's the revenue side, the expenditures by programming, and a further detailed breakdown of employee costs. We think that get to about 90% of the requirements in the bill with little additional cost in reprogramming our staff time at a county level. Thank you very much.
Ms. O'Rourke? And then we'll go to questions for both. Ms. O'Rourke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities. And I'd like to start out my testimony by thanking Representative Downey, if I can, for raising that threshold to the 5,000 limit. We did hand out a letter coming from the city of Handover, and I believe they're just over that population threshold of 2,500, which was in the bill as it came forward to you today. To be honest with you, we've heard from cities across the map on this since its introduction, and it's going to hit cities differently. I mean, there are some cities that look at the bill and say this is very close to what we do already. Representative Downey showed you the thick stack of paper, I think, that comes from the city of Edina, but there's a lot of this kind of information that's sometimes buried in those reports already. Where we've had concerns from finance directors and others is, as Bo mentioned earlier, them looking at their current software and wondering if they can produce the same sort of estimates and numbers. Again, that's going to differ from city to city. But I'd ask you as this moves forward to really think about the fact we do a lot of reporting and publicizing already of budgets and financial reports in the paper and things that go to the state auditor. One of the things we've talked about with NIOP over the course of the last few months is the fact that there's certain information that goes to the state auditor right now that is not currently mandated to be posted on her website. Some of that information deals with the financial reports and such. It doesn't go into quite the level of detail that I know NIOP and the Minnesota taxpayers are looking for, but it does certainly break down by expenditure on employees and such, and I know that's a huge drive behind this bill. And one last thing I want to leave on record for you is within your first omnibus tax bill, there is an important bill brought forward by Representative Runbeck dealing with the TNT process and laying out a TNT task force. And I would just ask of you to consider as this moves forward whether that might not be a better venue for sort of ironing out these sort of issues and some that are laid out on the handout that I gave dealing with publication and reporting on the various budget and financial reports, because we certainly don't have a problem with the transparency goals of this bill. It's just it really feels like there's a lot out there that maybe the public isn't absorbing as well as they should, and if there's a better way to iron it out, I think a task force like Representative Runbeck's might be a good venue for that. Thank you.
Thank you. I said we'll go to the two. Let's go to the three. Mr. Carlson, is your brother here?
Pardon me? My brother, Gary, I thought was up in the audience someplace.
Twins, separated at birth. Okay. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of the 13 of the larger counties. I, too, appear in opposition to the bill as currently crafted, and do want to indicate that we are amenable to reporting additional employee compensation and benefits information. We're also amenable to reporting the history that the proponents of this bill in the manner that we currently report. I think I will just lay this out in black and white. What our problem is reporting with expenditure type by contrasting us with the state. For both budget and financial reporting right now, the state reports on a functional or program basis. If this is so simple for us to do, then why isn't the state reporting its information on expenditure data? Go out to the state's website, look at their budget reporting, look at their financial reporting. They report in exactly the same manner as we do on a function or program basis. They do not report on an expenditure type basis. They would have similar costs just as we do to convert their processes to provide the summary detail that's being asked for in this bill. And that cost is considerable. For the counties, 78 of the smaller counties use the same financial reporting budgeting accounting software. It does not have a summary function to create this expenditure type summary that's being asked for. to just finally close, we already incur substantial costs for Truth and Taxation, $3 million a year according to a 2007 survey. That costs for that have gone up since then with the rise in postage. The reason why people aren't showing up at our hearings, frankly, is because we believe they're satisfied with the price that they incur right now. The whole point of Truth and Taxation has currently conceived is to identify the specific price for the local government services that those individuals receive, and we're doing that. If they want the summary or the history information, they come to the meetings or they request it, they are getting it right now. We simply do not believe that there's substantial reasons to impose a new unfunded mandate in a year that we had understood those mandates were supposed to be reduced.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. What I'd like to do, members, is I've got some members with questions of our trio here. We'll get to those. Then I'd like to go to the folks that support the bill. Then we have an amendment, and then I'd like to take action on this bill because I do want to hear from Representative Hortman. I also do have Representative Quam has an informational hearing he'd like briefly. So with that, questions for our trio? Okay. Representative Carlson, did you want to follow up at all with?
I'll listen to the rest of the testimony.
Okay, thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Loeffler. Then Erickson, then Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our local government representatives, I am concerned that this would put a lot of work into something that wouldn't be used. I'm wondering if you might entertain the possibility of this being a pilot project where you would seek, you know, some members, rural and metro, who would try this out for a year, that have the website capabilities to actually track, you know, the clicks and, you know, see how much this is really used. Because this is a big change. I think it's been an advance to go to programmatic-based budgeting, and that is generally the standard in public budgeting across the nation. I mean, it's been quite a long time that we've gone to that. To go back to the expenditure thing, you know, has pluses and minuses, but I think we really need to, before we enforce these kind of an unfunded mandate on our local partners, maybe we can try it out and see if it might, how much community interest it actually generates and how many people are using this level of detail for all the work that we'd have to assemble it. And so I'd like your reaction to that.
Mr. Chair, I'll go first. General Rourke with the League of Cities. It's certainly something we'd be open to. Obviously, a pilot project makes it a much smaller scale for members like ours.
Madam Chair, Bo maybe want to reply on behalf of counties too. I think our larger preference is really for the professionals, the state auditor's office, and for our financial staff to come up with the most amenable way to accomplish the objectives that we're trying to do here. Again, we have no objection to providing history on the basis that we currently report, providing additional information regarding employee compensation and benefits, but going beyond that is a significant step, as we've tried to illustrate, and we think the best people to come up with that are the individuals who are directly involved with that.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson Anderson, then we're going to go to the proponents. So Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to any of the three of you, I tend to track the monthly expenditures for at least a couple of my counties. And knowing that that's available, at least for the counties that I represent, on their websites, why could not that be in some way configured to reach an expenditure statement at the end of the year that would then show the history of these specific expenditures that I find are recorded on the monthly statements as the board votes to pay the bills?
Mr. Carlson?
Madam, Mr. Chairman, Representative, the information that you're referring to is the claims that are processed by the board, and, you know, we have no problem you know, providing that information that is, frankly, public. We're required to publish that as part of our minutes right now. Again, the history, we're more than willing to provide history on the programmatic or functional basis that we report on under both state and national standards right now. We have no problem meeting that requirement for the larger entities, certainly the increase to 5,000 help, that have the capability of in-house posting this on the website. Again, it becomes a difficulty when we're switching the basis on which we are required to report that information, which neither the state or any local governments do right now. It is simply not the state or national standard.
Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and to the three of you, considering the fact that Truth in Taxation is just an event now for us to hear what the county has basically decided, is, I think, frustrating for constituents because they want to know that they have a voice earlier. And I think if we educate them to know that the budget process, for example, begins probably in August or in some counties probably even June or July, that this information would be available to them, and perhaps it is, and I'm just not aware that it's that available. But I think that, to my constituency, that's been a frustration, that when the law changed the Truth in Taxation not to be a night for input on budgeting, but a night for announcing what the budget was, that folks are frustrated that they can't track what's been happening. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's just my reaction.
Thank you. We have some more questions here. We'll need to be concise and speed it up here a little bit. Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would have to just echo what Representative Erickson has outlined and what Representative Downey has outlined. It's very troubling to me that they aren't able to provide this kind of data, that we have 60% that have concerns about this on the county level and 80% on the city level. I mean, we're not talking, you know, that you're operating with Apple IIe's or Commodore 64 computers. I mean, there is technology out there, a lot of it for free, that you can have available to these communities to provide this kind of data. So I would find it very difficult to believe that this data cannot be provided in a easy to understand format for these citizens.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just ask Mr. Carlson or Mr. Rourke or Mr. Berenson, Is the problem going looking retroactively in time at the data at this point, or if the bill alternatively said, as I read the bill, it says it should provide 4 or 5 years of data. If instead the bill said, you know what, let's start today and let's present each year from here on forward by expenditure type, is that a different story?
Mr. Chairman, members, again, under current state and national standards, we report our accounting systems and budgeting systems are developed around the reporting on a programmatic basis. Again, we've offered again and again and again, we're willing to provide the history on the manner that we currently report, the manner that our systems is set up to provide. But going to this expenditure type is not a current requirement, is not a manner in which we operate currently, as is also true of the state. And so consequently, there would be cost. And so consequently, there would be cost for us to provide that, particularly that history, but even providing that on a contemporaneous basis at the summary level that's being asked here. Again, we have no problem providing the history in the manner that we report on a programmatic or functional basis.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Carlson, would the local impact of this bill be reduced if instead it said we will begin this approach tomorrow, going forward, rather than going back and doing the work to dig out the historical data right now?
Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, it would not be reduced substantially. I mean, obviously there's additional work going back and getting the history for the three prior years that we're supposed to report on, but the cost is changing the software to summarize it, and then the manual work to go back to prior years to put it on this expenditure type basis. Again, reporting our history on the functional program basis that we've always reported on isn't an issue for us. It's the changing the manner of reporting that we simply don't do right now.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, I have to make a public apology here to members on my side of the aisle, because to the Lincheski question about the role of the minority, we have heard through property taxes and this committee a much higher percentage of DFL bills than Republican bills. So to my colleagues on this side of the aisle, I would like to publicly apologize that I haven't been hearing Republican bills in the percentages I should have. So with that, I hope you'll accept my apology. And so with that, we'll go to the member or the folks that have wished to testify on behalf of the bill as amended 1954. If you could please step down, and we want to give you as much time as we did the other side. Then we'll go to questions, then the Marquardt Amendment, then we'd like to vote, then to Hortman, then to Quam. Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kay Rocco, and I am the Director of Public Policy for NIAP, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, representing the developers and owners of commercial real estate, along with the thousands of tenants that are in the buildings our members own and manage. And as many of you know, we've been focusing our time and energy on business property taxes for many years, primarily at the state level. But recently, we started to focus some of our time and energy on the local level, attempting to understand Minnesota's complicated property tax system and the incredible complicated relationship between state and local units of government. And we discovered in that process that non-property tax revenue fluctuations can significantly have an impact on local budgets. But we came to the conclusion that first we needed to deal with spending at a local level. So we said, well, let's just go to those budgets and we'll start to dig into them, and we'll easily be able to figure out how taxpayers' money is being spent. And that's when we realized that it is not easy at all for a taxpayer who doesn't understand financial reporting, who doesn't go to the state auditor's website, to quickly and easily understand what their property tax dollars are actually buying. So here's what we're asking for. If there's a handout in your packets, and if you go to page 2 and look at these four graphs, the one on top of page 2 is typically how you'll find this pie chart on most every budget. And it is a breakdown of expenses, as we've been hearing, by program area. And then across from that is a little bit more detail in the program area, showing some trend costs and relationship from year to year. And what we're asking for is for the bottom two charts to be added. So the bottom pie chart on page 2 is that same budget presented by expenditure code. And we know that that information is in the budgets, because you need to understand how you're going to spend your money before you can come up with a program budget. And then across from that, we're asking for some trend information, because we think it's important to see the trend lines of these expenditures as well. So this is what we would like taxpayers to see. It would make it real simple and real easy for them to understand what's going on with their local budget. So we're asking for 8 expenditure categories. Because as important as it is to understand budgets by a program area, it is equally as important to understand local budgets by expenditure type. And we know that this information is there, because repeatedly in other hearings on these bills at the Capitol, when legislators ask local jurisdictions, if a taxpayer calls you up and asks for this expenditure type information, would you be able to provide it? Every single time, they've all said, yes, we can provide it, and we can do it easily. So again, the combination of program-based budgeting and expenditure-type budgeting would give taxpayers a much easier way to understand what's going on with their local budgets. I also want to add, this certainly is not the be-all and the end-all for understanding property taxes. In our opinion, this is just the beginning, and I appreciate your time and energy.
Thank you. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mark Haveman. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Taxpayers Association. I want to focus my remarks this morning on the local government effort and cost issues that are being discussed here, as well as provide our organization's perspective on them. When one of our members asks us to help them dissect the reasons for property tax increases, the content of this bill is essentially part of the work that we do to help them understand the reasons for property tax increases. And the reason we can do it is because, as already been suggested, in many cases, when this budget information is online, the detail necessary to do this information is already available online. It's just we are in the business of then of simply aggregating it and reformatting it a little bit. The reason the information is available is because this expenditure type information are the building blocks for program-based budgeting. A $1 million parks and recreation program budget is comprised of X dollars for salary, Y dollars for fringe benefits, Z dollars for contracted services. It strikes us as very difficult to imagine being able to actually report and prepare and report and create a program-based budget without expenditure type information readily available at your fingertips. So when we put this information together, we are embarking on probably the lowest tech, highest cost way imaginable. We are taking pieces of paper with our trusty Texas Instrument calculators and adding it up page by page to figure how this stuff is all put together. Our training essentially involves the skill of addition. That's essentially all we're doing. And as far as labor hours concerned, it takes us about 6 to 8 hours if the information is readily available. So with respect to the local impact note, I can't answer the question how to reconcile our experiences with the estimates that have been put on there. I would just argue that this information oftentimes does exist already. It is a manual manipulation of this. We do it fairly expeditiously, and again, in the lowest cost, the highest cost and lowest tech manner that we can fathom. So, thank
questions
you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for either the testifiers or members? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the first time I've seen the bill. It's been through a number of committees, but not on any that I sit on. So you're asking for this instead of the program-based budgeting that is currently done. You're not asking for redundant reporting, are you?
Mr. Havman?
Mr. Chairman, from our perspective, this is a complement to program-based budget reporting. This is not a replacement for program-based budget reporting. In our opinion, this provides another lens through which to look at budget information. This provides information on cost structures and cost trends that also help citizens understand reasons for property tax increases and help them assemble the story of what's happening in local government. This is not a replacement for program-based budgets.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So they report it out one way. You now want them to report it out another way in addition.
Mr. Haveman?
Mr. Chairman, yes, Representative Dabney. Our organization, considers this a complement to traditional program-based budget reporting.
Representative Dabney?
All right. Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will go to the amendment. We will bring, thank you very much, Mr. Haveman and Ms. Rakow. And then let's go to let's first go to Ms. Dalton on some comments on the first Marquardt question.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do actually have a handwritten amendment available to be passed out that will actually do what Representative Downey tried to do in his oral amendment and respond to Representative Marquardt's concern that it also exclude all the counties under 5,000 as well.
Okay. Let's get the amendment distributed, please. Let's make up a name for this amendment. Let's call it a Ms. Dalton, what should we call it? Oral. But it's not oral.
Mr. Chair, why don't you call it the H-1954-A5 amendment?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Okay. Do members have the amendment? Representative Downey moves to amend House File 1954 with the House File HF 1954-85, Amendment Richmond Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My oral amendment was much simpler, but I think this actually does the job. So.
Okay, questions? Representative Dabney?
So Representative Downey, I'm trying to understand the impact of this. So some counties now would not be required to report in this redundant fashion that you're proposing in the bill. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'd have to defer Dalton. To staff on the, I don't know all the populations of counties.
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, I believe there's only one county right now. I'm sorry, there are more. Mr. Hines has corrected me. There are three counties with a population under 5,000 right now. Three out of 87.
Representative Dabney?
So, trying to get my head around your bill, Representative Downey, the nice folks who just testified said it was important for taxpayers to be able to understand what's going on and that this second way of reporting is important, but apparently it's not important for all taxpayers under your amendment. And I'm just wondering if you could explain which taxpayers it wasn't important to have this second form of reporting available for.
Representative Downey.
And why?
Excuse me. Chair, Representative Dabney, this amendment is actually a concession to the organizations who are here testifying in opposition. So I actually agree with your point and would love to have my bill in the state that it was originally drafted, but as a way to try and find some common ground and move forward without their opposition, I'm willing to take their suggestion to put the threshold a little bit higher.
Representative Dabney.
Well, I guess then, Mr. Chair, if this is a concession to get the support of AMC, does AMC support the bill if this amendment is put on?
Representative Downey?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, I am doing everything I possibly can to try and accommodate their concerns, though I still struggle to understand what their true concern is. I could hammer the bill through. With their opposition, I'm just doing my best to try and find a little bit of common ground as we go into Ways and Means.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Downey.
Okay, Representative Downey renews his motion on the A5 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. To the A3 amendment, thank you for your patience, Representative Marquardt. If you could please briefly describe your amendment, and we'll go from there. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. And, you know, I like the provisions in House File 1954, and I also agree, I don't think we should opt it to 5,000. I mean, I know cities and counties, you know, it's going to be an extra cost for them, but I do think the extra information to the public is worth that. But I do think also we need to recognize this is an unfunded mandate. And I think that's the point the cities and counties are trying to make, is that I'd feel even better about this bill if we were to eliminate some other mandates, but we're not doing that. And so I think members need to recognize when you do something like this, even though I think it's important and worth the extra cost and time cities and counties are going to put in, it is an unfunded mandate. And I have voted for them before, and I'm not pure on that, but let's call it what it is. But that has nothing to do with my amendment. But what I would like to say is that I like everything here in this bill, but I think it only shows half of the story. And I really think what residents really want, and if in fact we're going to have cities and counties, you know, relook at the way they kind of put things out, let's do it all at once. And I think what residents really want is what drives property taxes. And this focuses on the spending side, which I think is very, very important. That certainly is a huge driver for property taxes. And salaries in any, you know, whether or not schools or whatever, cities, huge part of that. I think this is all good. But I think there's some other things that drive property taxes, and this bill would require about maybe five additional lines to kind of what you've seen here. It would require a change in population.
President Marquardt, the amendment. You're
Now I'm on the amendment,
right.
A3.
Thank you.
It would make the changes to population, make the changes in tax capacity, and then also include an implicit price deflator inflation or some measurement of inflation. And then the last part of this amendment would say, indicate where there was state action that dealt with either the revenue side, which could be additions or cuts in aids or credits, and state changes on the expenditure side, which could be additional mandates or reduction in mandates. They'd have to explain that. I think this would give a more accurate picture of what really drives property taxes. We're never going to get to everything because every city does business differently. But Representative Downey, I like everything that's in your bill, but I can't support the bill if it doesn't include, it's incomplete, the bill itself. I think this amendment makes it more complete on actually giving residents, and that's what we want, to get residents involved in this process and give them more information. This will actually create more discussion on what drives property taxes. And members, I'd ask for support on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Mark Court. Representative Downey?
I urge a no vote on the amendment, and I credit Representative Mark Court for all his work on local government reporting and performance measurement and the like. We're very aligned on a lot of that. Members, much of what's in this amendment, you could throw in a ton of other stuff. Frankly, a lot of what's in this amendment is part of the fog that we're trying to part and provide just a very simple, clear picture of spending. So I'd urge a no vote.
Okay, Representative Runbeck.
Well, and just another comment, Mr. Chair, is that I think this kind of information is something that, at least the tax and truth and taxation hearings I've been at, cities are very eager to share with residents. I mean, they really want, you know, the citizens to understand what impact has been had by different revenue factors such as these. I mean, we hear it. We get it when we go to these meetings.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. I kind of like this amendment, but I'm going to defer to the author at this point. But, President Marquardt, I think you're onto something here. I hope that the discussion can continue because there are other factors. But I'm going to defer to the author at this point, but I hope the discussion continues. Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wish things were simple and clear in local government budgeting, but they're just not. I mean, that's the reality. And I think if we want informed taxpayers evaluating whether things are changing for reasonable reasons, they need this kind of information because it does dramatically change things. In Hennepin County, we cut our employment and training program contractors who help people who are on public assistance get jobs by 24%. The reason for that was because of the state budget cuts that were imposed last year. And there's no way any citizen is going to know that, just looking at the numbers, to know was it related to the fact that they've all gotten jobs and we don't need these people? Is it related to something else? There's no context. And I think these footnotes would be really useful, and I think they also ought to include federal changes, because otherwise you're going to jump to the wrong conclusions if you just have these expenditure numbers with no context about what's been happening in terms of state and federal actions that influence them.
Thank you, Representative Loeffler. Just an aside here, we're going up against the clock. Representative Quam, do you have any folks that have traveled from Rochester, your district, or Byron, or Dodge County?
Here's one. We have one person that traveled some distance that would like to testify.
Okay, otherwise just roadies and groupies, pretty much. Okay. Okay, we will do the best we can. I can't promise anything. Representative Portman.
Well, just briefly, Mr. Chair, I think that the Marquardt Amendment is a good one because I think what property taxpayers would like to see is the per capita cost of government, and if you don't have the population growth in there, and then also the effect of development. In my community, we have a lot of homes. We don't have a lot of commercial property, and the impact that adding commercial property to the tax rolls makes on the way the whole thing works. I think Representative Marquardt has a well thought out amendment, and I hope you will continue to talk to him about it.
Okay. Representative Marquardt renews his motion for the A3 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No. No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Downey, final thoughts on your bill?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Great discussion once again. And if Mr. Carlson were right and everybody was satisfied with the price of government and there were no complaints about property taxes this past year, we probably wouldn't have this bill in front of you. But I think it's an important step to provide just a very simple, clear and concise one- or two-pager for people to look at as compared to what they're currently asked to look at if they really want to understand where their spending is going in local government. So I'd appreciate your support on the bill.
Thank you for the final comments. Any other quick questions? Representative Downey moves House File 1954 as amended to be passed and sent to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we've got some other stops here. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Downey. Representative Portman.
I can do it from here, or you want me to go to the table?
Right here is fine, if you can be brief, because then we will bring up Representative Kwan. Why don't you get up here, too?
I will be very brief. I had a very compelling argument in property taxes about why my bill should move forward, but then I have learned facts that sort of undercut my arguments. I was fully prepared to come to the committee and call Representative Biskins and other residents of Scott County freeloaders off of the Hennepin County property taxpayers. But what I have since learned is that the beautiful facility we built in Representative Canoose District was paid for with state resources, not my Hennepin County property tax dollars. And the facility that we own and operate in Scott County, a lot of Hennepin County residents use it, and that we are proportionally paying a decent percentage towards our usage. And so, you know, while I enjoyed my little grudge match with the Three Rivers Park District in Property Tax Committee, it looking at the numbers in their budget, and I did read their 100-page budget last night and met with them for an hour this morning, the facts don't really bear out my beef as well as I thought that they did.
Where's the beef? I don't think there's anybody back there. Representative Biskins.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Fortman. I wouldn't mind voting for your bill here, and I say that sincerely. Now, I speak only for myself, not as a member of the Scott County delegation, well, as a member, but not for Scott County delegation, or for those who may someday be blessed to represent Scott County, the lady to my right, because I have always argued that Scott County's joining the Three Rivers Park District, they will always be the ugly stepchild of the group, and the more they stay in it, the more, you know, our taxpayers will pay, but it'll pay to go to the core. I've always hoped that we could get out, and the more legislation we bring forward like this, which slaps Scott County around, the easier it'll be for me to make my case. I just hope that the author of the bill sticks to her principles, and when there comes a day when a bill comes forward which says, you know, healthy people's health care insurance should not be used to pay for sick people, that she would stick to her principles at that point as well.
I think we'll leave it at that if that's okay. Representative Portman.
That's okay.
Thank you, Representative Portman, very much. Thank you, Representative Biskins. Okay, Representative Kwan, I will move House File 2358, and we will not be actually taking action on it, so it is officially before us, 2358. Representative Kwan, briefly, and then to the folks that have driven from some ways.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a extension of a sunset on the historic structure rehabilitation bill that it, well, it's law now, and the main intent is to leverage a federal program and allow our state to take some older structures and revitalize them and keep some beautiful buildings active in the community and part of our businesses. And now I'll hand off to my testifiers.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bonnie McDonald, and I am the Executive Director of the Preservation Alliance in Minnesota. I guess I would be one of Representative Kwan's groupies in the room, so I do appreciate that you've made time for this bill to be heard.
Okay, he has a lot. Ms. McDonald,
yes.
Who is the person that drove from a ways?
That is Mr. Moody, so I will reserve the bulk of the time for him.
Okay, because if we come back to it, I mean, you're here all the time anyways. And but go ahead, and then we want to hear from the gentleman that drove from a ways.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that we've passed out an information packet that has an economic impact report about the results of the job creation measure that is the state historic tax credit, and it's produced 1,808 construction jobs as well as additional and indirect induced jobs. So please take a look at that, and certainly Mr. Kelleher and I are here to answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Please state your name for the record, please, sir.
My name is Paul Moody. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of Faribault Woolen Mill Company and one of the partners as well. And for full disclosure, while I do drive to Faribault every day, I only drove from Edina this morning.
Oh, so. Boy, you're kind of pushing it here.
Yeah.
One of my groupies, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Moody.
Well, what I wanted to do here is, well, I appreciate the opportunity to speak and just share a little real-life experience and how we've benefited from the tax credit program and what it meant to our project. I'm going to give you just a real quick history of the mill and how we got involved this, since it was just a year ago, and how this the credit was beneficial to us and how it will be going forward. The Faribault Woolen Mill Company was formed in 1865, and at its current location, where we are today, it's been there since 1892. And it's continuously operated since 1865 through 2009 when it closed due to some business and other economic reasons. And at one time, before it closed, I believe it was the oldest manufacturing company in the state of Minnesota, I think along with Cargill. It's a 175,000 square foot fully integrated mill, and that's all it's ever been. And by fully integrated mill, I mean that every process from the raw wool through the complete manufacture of the blanket takes place, or the woolen goods takes place within the mill. And there are very few, if any, fully integrated mills left in the United States. This mill has an incredibly rich history. It's employed people that we still have there today that have been here from 25 to 50 years. And I believe at its peak, and I can't confirm this, but at its peak it was somewhere between 150 and 200 jobs. And I'd also point out at one point this mill produced half the woolen blankets sold in the United States. So it's a very significant place in American history and certainly Minnesota history. The opportunity for my cousin and I, who it was just a year ago in March where we took the first look at this facility, and as I mentioned earlier, it had been closed in 2009 after 143 years of operation, victim of some business and economic factors. I visited this place back in March of early March of last year, and when I went in, as I said, been closed for 2 years, it had experienced a 500-year flood the fall before, where 10 feet of water had been deposited in the basement. So my first look at this place was an extremely large, very old building with lots of problems. There was no plumbing running, or limited electricity, no heat. The roof leaked, and so one would say, what motivated you to go forward? But it was truly the history of the mill, and it was important for my cousin and I as we looked at the business opportunity, is that the building itself was a big part of the history of this mill, if not its location. It sits on the Cannon River next to a dam that had once provided water power to the facility, and so it was the building was incredibly critical to our decision making. And we had to make fairly quick decisions, but knowing that the tax credits were available was important. The marshalling of our capital and where we were going to how we were going to utilize it for this. And you know, there's parts of this building are in excess of 115 years old, and not knowing what would be needed and the extent of which we'd have to make repairs and rehabilitation. Knowing that the credits were there were important. Now, we, of course, didn't know at the time whether or not we would be able to receive historic designation, which is obviously a threshold for the tax credits. But we felt in some ways that if this isn't a historic site, I'm not sure what is. But I'm glad to report on this last Tuesday, the State Review Board did pass on our application to the federal government for and approving the historic designation for the National Register. So we're hopeful that within 60 days that we will be on the National Register. For that, we have did some of the benefits of we began work really back.
Mr. Moody, I hate to do this, but could you wrap it up quick here?
I will. The impact to us is we
you're not from that far away.
That's right. I don't have that far to travel today. So we've had every trade that you can imagine over the last 9 months. Adding to this, we've had probably 25 contractors a day at the peak. We 10 to 15 on average for the last year. We've made many improvements, and then to the point on the bill before you, we are going to be making more improvements as we stage this, and it would be greatly beneficial to know that the credit will extend out beyond its current sunset and would be meaningful. But it has been an incredibly meaningful thing to our project, and I think it would be meaningful to many others. So we're great supporters.
Thank you, Mr. Moody. I apologize on the time here, but Representative Bisgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just an observation from a retiring member of the legislature to my colleagues around the table. If you ever want a piece of legislation to achieve immortality, put a sunset date on it, and I guarantee we'll never let it die.
With that, thank you, Mr. Moody. Thank you, Representative Quam, Ms. McDonald. Thank you, members and staff, for your hard work today. With that, good government today, good government all the time. We are adjourned.